This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
We are moving on to Michael Maskey. Michael is the CEO Director of Cybersecurity and Digital Forensics at Sensei Enterprises, Inc. He holds a degree in telecommunications from James Madison University and is an Uncase certified examiner, a certified computer examiner, a certified ethical hacker, and an access data certified examiner, and holds a certified information systems security professional. He is an expert on cybersecurity with experience in network troubleshooting, design and implementation, security, systems integration, and computer engineering. He is a member of the International Society of Forensic Computer Examiners. Cybersecurity is so important, and Michael is going to speak to us about cybersecurity best practices. So, from the expert.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan. So I'm going to talk to you briefly about cybersecurity best practices, particularly when it comes to working remotely or operating a remote law practice. And much of what's the recommendations that are in these slides have to deal with firsthand experience with responding to frantic phone calls at midnight from attorneys who have experienced ransomware or data breaches and don't know where to turn. And much of our recommendations have come from those examples. So starting off, whether you're a solo practitioner or a small law firm, it really doesn't matter the size, the number one threat that you are facing now is ransomware. The uptick in ransomware cases across all industries, not just law firms, is astonishing. It seems like every day we're hearing about a company paying a ransom or that have been attacked. Just recently, we had the JBS meat processor, and then we had the gas company a few weeks ago that caused a shortage here on the East Coast that were crippled by ransomware. And the second one is business account takeover attacks. And this is simply when attorneys and users in particular will use the same password for multiple accounts. And those passwords are obtained via a data breach and released to the internet, become public. And without knowing that their information has been compromised, they don't change their passwords. And so the attackers are able to access their accounts, in particular Microsoft 365, and take over their, you know, their email mailbox at that point in time. So I'll walk you through both of these quickly and what we recommend and what you can do to stop them. So starting with ransomware, law firms are more and more a target, not only because of the confidential information they contain, but also if you deal with mergers and acquisitions, sensitive data, the attackers want this information. They want the clients that have money to pay the ransoms. So previously, up until about a year ago, going back several years, we had what was called ransomware 1.0. Essentially, this would be ransomware would get installed on your computer system. The files that were attached to your computer, whether it was your My Documents or your network, the network share off of your server, the files would become encrypted and inaccessible. Often at that point, you would receive an email or there'd be a text file on your laptop with ways on how to contact the attackers or the hackers to submit a ransom to get your data back, for them to give you a decryption key so you could decrypt your files and continue practice. Generally, it was paid through Bitcoin. This was really just a once and done attack. You get infected, your files get encrypted, you pay the ransom. Chances were, 50-50 that they would give you a decryption key to get your data back. Now we are experiencing ransomware 2.0, sort of a new generation, where they've added some additional steps to what's happening. We're seeing targeted ransomware, but more specifically now, in most ransomware cases, we are seeing data exfiltration, meaning they are installing ransomware on your systems, on your servers, and they're not only encrypting the data, but they are also moving a copy offsite to a location in the cloud that the attackers control, and are deleting the information off your systems. They're not just leaving the encrypted files. So what they are doing now is not only are they sending you a ransom to decrypt your files should you pay it, but if they do get money out of you to decrypt the information, then they are sending a second request for money, threatening to release your data to the public or put it on the internet where it's accessible by anybody if you don't pay them a second ransom. And they promise they will delete the information once you pay them a second time. So for a business, you know, you're dealing with privacy and data breach notification laws. You got huge financial loss, especially if you are unable to access your data. You deal with reputational damage, and we have seen some people that have called us actually go bankrupt because they couldn't afford the ransom. So what are they after? Primarily, it's money. But we are seeing intellectual property and trade secrets. And more recently, with some of these utilities that are being impacted, it's really a national security issue where they're denying and disrupting service. And actually, the White House just released a memo at the beginning of June warning about the uptick in ransomware attacks, that more needs to be done in the private and public sector to protect data against ransomware. Because ultimately, the ransoms that are being paid to criminals. So you're only furthering their interest in continuing this. So how are you impacted by ransomware? How do they get into your systems? Most often, it's through compromised remote desktop protocols. This is often seen in a firm environment where you have a physical server and you're using remote access to access your network. Phishing emails is number two, and number three is software vulnerabilities, meaning you're running an outdated computer system, whether it's Windows 7 or something that's older that's no longer supported, or you're not updating your critical patches on your Windows or Apple computer in a timely fashion when they're released. So how do you prevent ransomware? Again, update your systems, your operating systems, third-party updates, whether it's your browser or Adobe Acrobat. When you are prompted for patching, you know, when your system actually gives you a pop-up and asks to download, the more that you can automate these processes, the better. And more often than not, what we see are firms, they don't like to patch. They claim that patches or updating the software actually breaks things, but ultimately, you know, you need to patch your systems to stay secure, to stay up to date with this, with the critical updates. One of the other things that you should do is have a password policy. You know, require that your passwords, even on your own computers that, you know, that you use, even if you're solo, are, you know, a number of characters. We recommend a passphrase. So that way, if you're dealing with 10, 12, 14 characters, it doesn't seem like a burden because you're remembering a phrase. You certainly want a complexity requirement, so upper and lower case, pretty much like your banks or your financial institutions require. And then lastly, one of the most important things that if you learn coming out of this this presentation is if your account, if your provider offers multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication, please use it. Please turn it on and enable it. And this is essentially when you're logging into Microsoft 365 to check your email, you type in your username, your password, and all of a sudden you get either a text, or if you use the Authenticator app, you type in a six-digit code. Many banks now require this, or financial institutions require this. Your business email accounts should require this. I know case management software like Clio, Rocket Matter, they all have two-factor authentication options. And ultimately, it's often given away or included at no additional cost. So it would be silly and not to use it. So how can you prevent How can you defend against ransomware? In terms of software, of course, you want to make sure you have security software installed on your computer. It is updating and scanning your system in real time or on a periodic basis, scheduled scans. And one of the products that we recommend, in addition to, so this would be in addition to like a McAfee or a Symantec, is a product called SentinelOne. And that is primarily built for just the protection of ransomware. So when you're dealing with email in Microsoft 365, you certainly want to be wary of any phishing attempts. These are links or attachments that come in that may lead you to malicious websites or to download attachments that have malware embedded with them. Microsoft has some add-ons that you can subscribe to help filter or prevent that from reaching your inbox. There are also some third-party solutions that, such as Mimecast or Proofpoint. So essentially the email en route to your inbox goes through those providers. They filter out and prevent the bad stuff from reaching your inbox. And they send you an email with, you know, quarantine messages, you know, on a scheduled basis, and you can control how often you want to receive those. I believe that we get those about 3 or 4 times during the business hours, and then once or twice overnight. So when to limit the amount of data that is impacted, if you were to get infected by ransomware, is to make sure that in a firm setting, and this would not necessarily apply to a solo, but in a firm setting, to make sure that your users only have access to the information that is tied to their job roles, meaning you don't want your secretary or your admin staff being able to access your HR data or your financial records. So it's called the principle of least privilege. That way, if their computers were to get impacted with ransomware, the ransomware wouldn't necessarily be able to propagate to those locations that that user can't access. So it's an additional layer of protection from not only a security standpoint and, you know, keeping out your employees from accessing data that they shouldn't have access to, but also when it comes to ransomware, it's one way to protect the information from the ransomware from encrypting everything. And lastly, you want to make sure you have adequate backups, complete backups. You don't want to, keep a USB drive connected to your computer system, because if you were impacted with ransomware, the ransomware could infect your backups or even delete your backups, eliminating your data. So you have nothing to recover from. So you want to make sure that if you do a local backup, it's kept offline, except when it's running, or if you use an online vendor or a cloud-based backup provider, that is recommended too. And is sort of ransomware proof there. It allows you to recover and not have to pay that ransom. Cybersecurity awareness training, you guys are taking this webinar, so that's a good step. If you have employees, making sure that there's mandatory cybersecurity awareness training at least once a year to educate them on how to detect phishing emails, what to do, what not to click on, how to alert your IT provider or alert someone that something is going on. Is very important, sort of the basic steps of cybersecurity. And, going back to sort of that second threat that businesses are facing is the business email compromise. And essentially, once they take over, what they typically do is they lay in wait. They see who you are emailing. And especially if you deal with ACH payments or wiring electronic payments, they will often wait until someone is requesting that you pay or that you request your clients pay via wire, and they send an attachment or they redirect the instructions to that individual without you knowing. And so once they have access to your account, not only do you have to deal with potential data breach notification laws in terms of what information they're able to access within your inbox, but also if you, again, are dealing with clients that pay you via wiring, you're now dealing with wire fraud. We've seen firsthand examples of clients that have law firms that have redirected payments, and upwards of several hundred thousand dollars, upwards of $1 million in one case, to the wrong accounts. next thing you know, they had to shut down shop because they weren't able to get the money back. So it's very important that, you know, again, your employees are educated and that you enable two-factor authentication with Microsoft 365 or any vendor that stores sensitive information. In this work from home environment or this work remote environment, there has been an uptick in what we call virtual private network attacks. You know, if you're connecting to your office, you can use your remote desktop or log me in or go to my PC. But one of the free mechanisms built into a Windows server is the virtual private networks. And often it's just a username and password, but, you know, more frequently now, firms are enabling two-factor authentication with the remote solution. But again, if you're a solo and you have your laptop, this wouldn't necessarily apply to you. VPN within the next year or two is going to probably be replaced with what's called the zero trust architecture. This is something that's going to be up and coming. And essentially with a virtual private network, you log in once. Once you log in, you connect to your, you know, you can connect to your network share, your servers. That's all you have to do. You've authenticated in the application or the server or the file, you know, the files you're accessing. They trust that you are who you say you are. So in the future, in the next year or so, what we are seeing starting to be implemented within larger firms and larger companies is what's called a zero trust network, where no one trusts anyone. So anytime you access something, there is some re-authentication. And that's because of the uptick in attacks. And we're starting to see this in this request or question within cyber insurance questionnaires. You know, they are asking, have you implemented any zero trust architecture? And if so, what? And we're starting to see, and along with what other remote access solutions or how can your employees access your firm data from working remotely? So it's starting to be picked up by the insurance carriers. And undoubtedly, that's going to be pushed down to the insured. If they know that they can be more secure and get lower rates, they're going to start to implement this more secure technology. When you're at home, one of the things just to keep in mind is that we are seeing firms require their attorneys to have their own wireless network that is separate from the family network. You want to make sure that the passwords you're using are secure, that your data is not being commingled with your kids who may be, you know, distance learning or streaming Netflix. And so that's one thing they're recommending. And when you connect from home, you know, we already talked about that. We talked about cyber insurance. And lastly, as a solo or small firm that's working remotely, we've already heard today about people that have policies and procedures in place and what they're recommending. One of those policies that you should have, one of those plans that you should come up with is called an incident response plan. It's just doing your due diligence, and many cyber insurance carriers require it. And simply, it is a document that states what do you do in the event that you are attacked or experience a potential data breach. Who do you contact? Who's your insurance carrier? Do they appoint an attorney or counsel to assist you through the process? Who are the vendors you contact? And the more prepared you are, you're not running around with your head cut off, with a head cut off when this occurs. It allows you to minimize financial damage and get up and running as soon as possible. And again, there's a lot of detail here that I won't go into that can be in the slides when you download them. But again, you want to make sure that you have all the information available. Most importantly, in printed version two, we had one experience where a client had their incident response plan. They contacted us. Their IRP was on the server, which was attacked, and it was encrypted. So although they had spent the time and money to develop a plan, they couldn't access it. So it's important that not only do you have an electronic copy, but you have a paper copy in the event that your incident response plan becomes inaccessible. And with that, I am finished with my presentation. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot me an email or reach out to us. And I thank everyone for attending.
Thank you so much, Michael. I think it's so important for people to realize the value of cybersecurity after putting so much time and effort into building a practice and making it more efficient with all this technology available. You got to have the security in place, or as you gave us examples, everything can disappear overnight.